Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Donald Trump's Truth Social is worth way less than anybody could have imagined, and that sent his stock prices tumbling this week, costing the former president more than $1 billion. We also have Rudy Giuliani, who is now begging the court, please don't take away my $3.5 million condo in Florida to settle my debts with all my creditors, because Giuliani told the court, I need it for my podcasting. Republicans are also suing the federal government to prevent President Biden from providing relief for low-income Americans in the form of student loan debt forgiveness. And there is a sneaky trick that Donald Trump could employ to further delay his upcoming hush money trial. All that and much, much more coming up on today's show. And don't forget, if you want the full show every week, sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Last week, following the merger of Trump Media and Technology Group with Digital World Acquisition, the stock for the newly formed company approached a value of almost $8 billion. Which is, of course, funny because the only property that Trump Media and Technology actually has is Truth Social. And according to the newest FEC filings, Truth Social is actually financially far worse off than anyone even knew. See, here's the thing. During all of this media hoopla about the merger actually finally happening, they reported that Truth Social brought in about $3 to $4 million last year, but spent $31 million. Now, those were based on estimates, of course, because we didn't have the fourth quarter financials yet. Well, now we do. And it turns out that that estimated $31 million loss for Truth Social was about $27 million too low. The newest analysis has found that Truth Social did in fact bring in almost $4 million last year, but spent $58 million, meaning Truth Social, the only active part of Trump Media and Technology Group that was valued at $8 billion a week ago, is a company that lost $54 million last year. So how in the hell is this thing worth anything? I mean, $1, let alone $8 billion? This is absolutely absurd, folks. If you don't think that there is some kind of shady crap going on with all of this thing, you are absolutely delusional at this point. Truth Social is hemorrhaging money. It is hemorrhaging users. And yet we're supposed to believe that just because the stock is doing well, or it did actually once this story broke on Monday, stock dropped by $5 a share. But anyway, it's still worth allegedly billions. Here's what Business Insider Emily Stewart, reporter, here's what she said about the thing. The stock is probably trading at something like 2,000 times the company's annual revenue. That is, Apple, for example, trades at about 7 times its total revenue. This is not a thriving business. Truth Social had an estimated 5 million monthly website visits in February of this year, according to third-party trackers, but the company isn't revealing exact metrics right now. By comparison, Facebook had 845 million monthly active users when it went public in 2012, and Twitter had 215 million when it IPO'd the following year. In other words, Truth Social is somehow valued far more than the actual real social media companies like Facebook and Twitter when they initially offered their public offerings. And yet, Truth Social has a tiny fraction of the users that these other sites have. In fact, according to another analysis, Truth Social only has about 845,000 active monthly users. The 5 million number that Emily Stewart pointed out was total website visits. Okay, not active users, but that includes people in the media, myself included, who go to Truth Social to look at Donald Trump's things. We don't have accounts. We're not active users. We're just reporting on what Trump said. So again, I want answers. I want an investigation at this point because this is insane. This is a company that loses tens of millions of dollars a year that is somehow valued between $7 and $8 billion as of this recording. That doesn't make any sense. Something is going on, and eventually this thing is going to come crashing down to earth. And if it happens before Donald Trump's six month window, when he can't sell any of his stock, then all of his shares by the end of that 6 months could in fact be completely worthless. Rudy Giuliani's bankruptcy hearing, court cases, whatever you want to call it, his proceedings, I guess, are going so very badly for the former mayor of New York City. Last week, Rudy Giuliani had to submit a filing to the court begging them, please don't take my $3.5 million Florida condo away from me, because of course the creditors, the people that Giuliani owes money to, they had previously asked the judge, hey, he's got this multi-million-dollar condo in South Florida that he's trying to keep away from us. We need you to seize it and sell it so that we can use that to settle his debts. But in his filing, Giuliani said, no, Judge, you can't take my condo because, and this is the real reason he gave in the court filing, that's where I do my podcasting. You can't have my multi-million-dollar condo because that's where my microphone is. And I need that to, you know, put out my weekly program. That's not a valid legal argument at all. Now, Giuliani did tell the court, like, hey, you can take my Manhattan condo. Like, go ahead and take that townhouse. I don't even want it. You know, you can get that money. That'll help. No, the New York townhouse, it's estimated that they could sell that at auction for about $5 million. To put that in perspective, Giuliani owes Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss $148 million. Just those two. That doesn't even include all of the other people that Giuliani owes money to. So selling a $5 million condo isn't going to save you, bud. You're going to have to cough up that Florida condo. And if it means you have to go find somewhere else to record your stupid little podcast every week, then by golly, you're just going to have to do that. But saying that this is where I record my podcast, again, not a valid legal argument. And here's the other part of that, Giuliani. If that condo were in fact registered to your business, you know, Giuliani Associates, then you might have an argument there, right? Like, hey, I know I live here, but it's also where I do my business. Therefore, you cannot seize it based on those grounds. Unfortunately, best I can tell, it's just registered in your name. So since it is an asset of Rudy Giuliani and not Giuliani and Associates, you can't argue that because this is where I do my business, you can't seize it because that is my livelihood and I have to be able to do that. So you see how you screwed up there? And of course, now that that's known, you also cannot change who has ownership of the condo in order to prevent the sale of it. Giuliani is up a creek right now, and he has no idea what he's going to do. And granted, adding a $3.5 million condo onto, you know, his assets here isn't even going to save him. It's not going to settle any of his debts. But I do think it's hilarious that this guy, who was once touted before he was mayor of New York as this brilliant lawyer, is now using the dumbest legal arguments that I have ever heard. 11 Republican-controlled states, led, of course, by Kansas's Republican Attorney General Chris Kobach, have filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration in an attempt to stop their latest student loan repayment plan that includes, of course, debt forgiveness for potentially millions of Americans who have signed up. So far, more than 7 million Americans, low-income Americans, by the way, because this is means-tested, 7 million Americans have signed up for President Biden's recently announced plan to continue making their student loan payments. The interest gets reduced a little bit under this new plan. It cannot snowball and crush the borrowers so long as they're making their payments. And then after 10 years of not missing any payments, they can qualify to have their debt forgiven. Okay, that's the plan. It is not a blanket, hey, you don't have to pay this anymore, the debt is gone. It's saying, listen, you're low income, so we're going to restructure your payments based on your income. We're going to get your interest under control for you. And if you don't miss a single payment for 10 years, then you can apply for possible forgiveness. And Republicans, 11 Republican-controlled states said, oh, hell no, this cannot stand. You cannot help low-income people. We are suing you, Biden administration, because we believe you have somehow overstepped your bounds here, which isn't really the case because there is the SAVE plan, the S-A-V-E plan, that actually gives him the authority to do this. They learned their lesson the first time the Supreme Court overturned their attempts to forgive student loan debt. So they went back, crossed the T's, dotted the I's, made sure everything was sound, and they relaunched the plan. But that's not okay for Republicans. They don't want poor people to get a little bit of relief. They don't want the Biden administration to get a political win. So they're trying to make poor people suffer. Now, here's the thing. You can't just file a lawsuit in America because you don't like something. In order to file a lawsuit, you have to have standing and you have to have an injury. So the question, of course, is what is the injury to these states if low-income people can get their student loan debt forgiven in 10 years? Oh, don't worry, because these idiots say that they definitely have damages. Here's what it is. With such a generous repayment plan, fewer borrowers will have an incentive to go into public service and pursue the public service loan forgiveness program, the states argue. They predict more state employees will leave their jobs and it will worsen public school struggles to recruit and retain teachers. They argue the plan will inject hundreds of billions of dollars in loan relief into the U.S. economy, which would require states to increase fraud protection efforts. So, you're mad that there's going to be more money in the economy, because like, oh great, now people are spending money, the economy's thriving, so now we've got to be on the lookout for more fraud? That is a hypothetical. It is not an actual injury. Hypotheticals do not count as injuries. And the first one I said, well, people aren't going to take these jobs because they don't need it to get their student loan debt forgiven, so they're not going to go into these careers. Also a hypothetical. You can't prove that. You absolutely cannot quantify that, and you cannot prove it. So both of these legal arguments that they have made, along with the third one, which of course is he overstepped his bounds, no. You do not have an injury, you do not have damages, therefore this lawsuit should be immediately tossed out of court. And if Republicans hadn't spent the last, 50 years packing our courts with conservative activists in black robes, this would be thrown out. But unfortunately, Republicans stacked the deck by stacking the courts, and this lawsuit actually has a very good chance of continuing the suffering of low-income Americans, just so Republicans can spite President Biden. On Easter Sunday, Donald Trump posted 43 different times on Truth Social before noon. 43 posts on Truth Social before noon on Easter Sunday. Donald Trump has become addicted to Truth Social, just like he used to be addicted to Twitter before he got kicked off and then, of course, allowed to come back on after Elon Musk took it over and rebranded it as X. But Donald Trump's contract with Trump Media Technology and Digital World Acquisition prevents him from using Twitter, so he's stuck on Truth Social. But either way, Donald Trump spends most of his time throughout the day ranting like a madman on Truth Social. And this has not, by the way, gone unnoticed by Republican strategists who are now admitting this is poison for his presidential campaign. Let me read you this. This is one Republican strategist who spoke to The Hill who said, quote, "In a lot of ways, he shoots himself in the foot. He hasn't learned that sometimes silence is the best response. But that's not his style. He wants everyone to know he's right, the media covers it, and the Trump campaign see that as translating to votes. I don't know if it does, the strategist said. Yeah, you do. You do know if that translates to votes or not. And the answer is no. There is not a single undecided voter in this country, right? Somebody who's on the fence. I don't lean right. I don't lean left. I just vote for the guy that seems best. There isn't a single person in this country who fits that description, who sees what Trump's puts on Truth Social, right? The name calling, the attacks on the judges and the prosecutors and his political rivals. Nobody sees that and says, huh, you know what? He's got my vote now. There isn't a single person that does that. There are, however, plenty of people, and this has been shown in focus groups, who look at these things and say, I can't support this. This man is crazy, they have said. It's not just that, oh, he's name-calling and that's mean. That's what Republicans for many years have wanted to say, like, oh, liberals are mad because he puts out mean tweets. It's not about the meanness of it. The voters look at this and they see a man who is unhinged. They see a man who has psychotic tendencies. They see a man that is, in their words, crazy. So Donald Trump's posts on Truth Social are not attracting any new voters. But what they do is they keep his base solidified, right? By attacking the justice system, you make them think that the system is rigged against you, and they cling to you even tighter. Let me read this. This is from another Republican strategist named Shermichael Singleton. He said, I think he needs to get back on X. His following there is significant and he had incredible engagement. He needs to be in multiple places at the same time. You want him to maximize his reach. Do you though? Do you really want more people seeing these posts? I don't think you do. Another, this is an assistant professor of journalism and media at the University of Texas at Austin, Josephine Lakito, who said he's reaching primarily loyalists with his posts on Truth Social. From an attention standpoint, Trump does not need everyone to be on Truth Social. You don't need to be on Truth Social to get Truth Social messages from Trump, especially if news organizations are covering it. And that is true. And that is part of the reason I believe that engagement on Truth Social is so low. Because you don't have to be there to see what the main draw is saying. People are going to talk about it. So even if you're not on Truth Social, these undecided voters out there are still getting fed this horrible stuff from Donald Trump on Truth Social in the news. They're getting it in the papers. They're getting it on YouTube. They're getting it on TikTok. They're getting it wherever they go because Trump won't shut the hell up. The best thing Trump could do is just stop. But as the first strategist pointed out, that's never going to happen. So Trump is going to continue basically digging his own political grave because he cannot control himself. And every time he posts, he's just turning off more and more voters. On Monday evening, Judge Juan Merchan actually did expand the gag order against Donald Trump to include the family members of the judge and the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg. However, Trump is still not technically completely barred from talking about the family members of the judge and the prosecutor. He only can talk about them if what he's attacking them for is relevant to the case, which of course should be nothing at all. So it pretty much is a full gag order, but it's not technically a full gag order on talking about the family members. But of course, this came after Donald Trump's repeated attacks on Judge Merchan's daughter. Trump has been attacking the young woman for a week. And the judge finally had enough after prosecutors came to him Monday and said, you have to clarify this order. So the judge said, I'll clarify it. I'll expand it. And that's exactly what happened. And Donald Trump took the news about as well as you would expect Donald Trump to take the news. And he got on Truth Social and fired off a fact-free attack on the judge and the prosecutor once again. Because those two are still not part of the gag order. He can say whatever he wants about the judge. He can say whatever he wants about Alvin Bragg. And yes, that actually is very important to know. Here's what Trump said on True Social. "I just was informed that another corrupt New York judge, Juan Merchan, gagged me so that I cannot talk about the corruption and conflicts taking place in his courtroom with respect to a case that everyone, including the DA, felt should never have been brought. They can talk about me, but I can't talk about them. That sounds fair, doesn't it? This judge should be recused, and the case should be thrown out. There has virtually never been a more conflicted judge than this one. Election interference at its worst." Judge Merchan, of course, has actually no conflicts in this case. And Trump is lying to his supporters when he says they can talk about me and I can't talk about them. You can. You can talk about the judge. You can talk about the prosecutor. You can accuse them of all sorts of crazy things, whatever you want. No one is stopping you from doing that. And also, for the record, they're not talking about you. I mean, Alvin Bragg is not getting on Twitter or Truth Social like Trump and just firing off horrible conspiracy theories about him. That's not happening. The judge isn't doing that. I mean, nobody is doing that other than, of course, Donald Trump. So he's sitting there accusing these people of horrible things while also whining that I'm not allowed to say anything about them, but they can talk about me, even though they're not even doing that, and you're still attacking them, even as you say you're not allowed to attack them. So I'm a little confused as to how that works, but that's what's happening in Donald Trump's dementia-riddled brain. He continued. That was not the end of it, folks. He went on in a separate post saying this. "Please remember, all of these lawsuits, charges, and indictments that have been brought against me have been orchestrated and coordinated by crooked Joe Biden, the White House, and the DOJ as an attack on crooked's political opponent, me. This has never happened before in our country. MAGA 2024. Also, a completely debunked talking point. There has been no coordination. Even if President Biden wanted to direct the Manhattan District Attorney to prosecute Donald Trump, he does not have any jurisdiction over that. Neither does the Department of Justice. And they have no impact or effect or sway over this case whatsoever. So Donald Trump's still out there lying, but he's no longer going to be able to lie about the judge's daughter. So I guess technically that's a victory. Even though Congress, the House of Representatives, is of course still on their 2-week vacation, things are not going well for Republicans in the House of Representatives, and they are prepared next week to step back into utter chaos. Chaos brought on, of course, by Marjorie Taylor Greene and her motion to vacate the speakership because she's mad that Mike Johnson didn't shut down the government. And they voted, of course, to continue funding the government. So she's pissed, wants him gone. She is not backing down. So immediately when Republicans come back next week, they're going to have to vote on whether or not to vacate the speakership. But even before that, even before Marjorie Taylor Greene threw them into more chaos, things were not going well for Republicans behind the scenes. And according to multiple new reports, things have only gotten worse since then. What's happening is that you've got the moderate, right? The normal Republicans, the ones who are okay with hurting Americans. We just don't have to be so brash and open about it. Then you have the MAGA Republicans, the Marjorie Taylor Greens and Matt Gaetzes, who have no interest whatsoever in passing legislation. They're just there to disrupt things. And that, I think, is honestly the best description of what these people are doing. They're not writing bills. They're not proposing legislation. They are there simply because, one, they're from deep red districts and they know their voters aren't going to get rid of them, so they're safe. So because of that safety, they can just do whatever the hell they want. We don't have to pass bills. We can make everybody else's life miserable, and then we'll just blame them when everything goes to hell. And that's what they're doing. Marjorie Taylor Greene is not taking any responsibility for plunging the GOP into chaos, just like Matt Gaetz is not taking any responsibility for plunging the House into chaos last year when he ousted Kevin McCarthy as Speaker, all because McCarthy would not kill the House ethics investigation into Matt Gaetz. But Greene is actually blaming the Republicans that are resigning from Congress. And that's also an area where a lot of division has occurred. Yes, we have had multiple Republicans in the last 4 months simply say, I'm done, I'm leaving, goodbye. Republicans now have a one-seat advantage in voting, and that's a really weak majority. And Green says it's those resigning Republicans to blame for the chaos. But behind the scenes, the moderates are saying those people resigned because of the chaos you caused. So them leaving didn't cause the chaos. Their leaving was a response to the chaos. Republican Congressman Greg Murphy described it perfectly. Speaker Johnson is put in a very difficult situation. No one wants to stop the government from running. It's poor governance. We can't keep the Republican circular firing squad. When this happens, only the Democrats end up winning. And circular firing squad here is, of course, the best analysis of what's happening. Everybody's pointing their fingers at one another because nobody wants to take the blame. And there is plenty of blame to go around. Marjorie Taylor Greene has caused this. Matt Gaetz has helped cause this. James Comer and Jim Jordan with their idiotic investigations into Biden have caused this. Years of doing nothing other than obstructing has caused this. There is not a single Republican in Congress that is blame-free. I don't care how moderate or Democrat-friendly you are. You have all been a part of this. You are all a cause of this. And you all deserve all of the unpleasantness that you are currently suffering from. Well, folks, we now have less than 2 weeks until Donald Trump is supposed to be facing his very first criminal trial, the hush money trial in New York. And he is running out of options to get that trial delayed any further. The start date, jury selection, is set to begin on April 15th. So he's got to think fast about what to do if he doesn't want to show up in a courtroom in the middle of April. And according to former prosecutor Joyce Vance, Trump really only has two options left. Now, before I tell you the two options he has left, it's important to know that Donald Trump's lawyers went to court in a filing this week and actually tried to argue that, hey, he's too famous, basically, to be prosecuted because we talked to 400 New Yorkers and they all said he's already guilty, so you have to delay the trial indefinitely, they asked for. Well, that's not going to work because those are issues that you actually deal with during jury selection. But Joyce Vance pointed out two more things Trump could possibly do to get this thing delayed. The first one is that he could ask for the judge to be recused. And if the court decides to take that up, that could cause a little bit of a delay, although I'm willing to bet they would go very quickly with it. Trump already suggested in his meltdown about having an expanded gag order that the judge should be recused. So that seems like a likely option that Trump will go with. The second option is what I'm calling the scorched earth option. And that is Donald Trump could actually just fire his entire legal team, which would then cause him to have to hire new lawyers. And then, constitutionally, he can make the argument to the judge like, hey, I've got new lawyers. I have a constitutional right to representation of my choosing. I'm choosing these people, but they need time to learn the case, to come up with their arguments, so we have to delay the trial. But again, that's the scorched earth technique. He would have to fire his entire legal team in order for that to even possibly work. And then Vance points out, it still probably wouldn't even work. Here's what she wrote. With trial only 2 weeks away, Trump is showing increasing signs of desperation. There are also the time-honored strategies of the desperate, getting sick or finding a sick or dying family member and firing your lawyers. What happens if Trump fires his lawyers? This can be a difficult one because defendants are entitled to counsel of their choosing and lawyers are entitled to sufficient time to prepare. But Trump has a lot of lawyers on his team, and the judge has to be prepared for this one. Trump would have to argue a significant issue has developed with his lawyers before the judge would agree to let them out of the case. And it's going to be difficult to do that with all of them. The judge could tell him to go ahead with the remaining lawyers because if Trump does this at the 11th hour, it's going to look manufactured. But it's still an issue the judge has to be careful about to avoid problems on appeal, And so far, Judge Merchan has shown himself to be a careful, meticulous jurist. Whew. So, therein lies the problem, though, right? Like, it would be obvious that Donald Trump would be doing this to delay the trial. But then again, if the judge knows that and says, I'm not going to give your lawyers time to prepare, then Trump's going to win on appeal. Like, he will easily win on appeal. So, Trump could have that option. But he can't just fire his lawyers. The lawyers can't just leave the case. The judge has to approve it. So, if there aren't valid legal reasons for these people to be removed from the team, Trump's not going to be able to go with that option. So, his only hope at this point is maybe he can get sick and delay it a few days. Because other than that, he's heading to court on April 15th. The RNC has decided that they do not yet have enough Donald Trump loyalists among their ranks, so they've decided to go out and hire yet another member of Donald Trump's orbit, this time former Trump lawyer and current 2020 election denier Christina Bobb. The problem with this decision to hire Christina Bobb is that she's not being hired to, you know, help run state parties or anything like that. Christina Bobb has been picked by the RNC to head up their election integrity unit. A woman who actually helped work with Giuliani to overturn the results of the 2020 election, who continues to this day to deny the results of the 2020 election, who last year published a book filled with lies about fraud in the 2020 election, is now in charge of election integrity for the Republican Party, because that's what Donald Trump wants. Put an election denier in charge of this, and she'll be the one that's going to go out there and essentially sell fraud to the public when I lose in 2024. That is effectively what Christina Bobb's new job is going to be. Her job will be to convince the public that if Trump loses, it's not because voters rejected him. It's because of these unseen forces that we can't quite prove, but we so know they're there, right? Laura Trump, the co-chair of the RNC, recently announced the formation of the Election Integrity Unit, saying, quote, "We have the first ever Election Integrity Division at the RNC. That means massive resources going to this one thing. We will have trained poll watchers, poll observers, poll workers, people in tabulation centers all across the country," she says. And they're going to put an election denier in charge of it. Now, part of me is wondering, how's the RNC going to do this, because they don't have any money, right? I mean, if you want to do things and hire people and train people to do certain things, that costs money, and you don't have it. So, best of luck with that idea. The other question I have is, why has Christina Bobb not been indicted? I mean, as I said, she actually worked with Rudy Giuliani on his lawsuits, you know, his efforts to help Trump overturn the election results. Christina Bobb wasn't indicted in Georgia. Christina Bobb isn't one of the unnamed co-conspirators in the January 6th case. And let's also not forget this incredibly important fact. Christina Bobb is the one who signed the document, a sworn affidavit, to the federal government saying Trump's returned all the documents, which we know is a lie. That alone is an indictable offense. So how is Christina Bobb able to go and just enjoy a new job at the RNC instead of having to sit and prepare for a criminal trial? That is the question I want answered. I have not seen it answered anywhere. So if anybody can please explain that to me, how this lawyer can sign a document that was a known lie to the federal government and not get criminally charged, I would love an answer to that question. A new analysis by Politico has revealed that Donald Trump has a very serious electoral problem coming up in the November 2024 election. Here's what's happening. Donald Trump is not able to recreate any of the success that he had in primaries in 2016 and in 2020 when he was the incumbent. And in fact, according to focus groups, according to polls, according to the voters themselves, and according to Republican Party officials in swing states, they're seeing a lot of people tell them, I'll never vote for Donald Trump again. These are not moderates. These are not independents. These are registered Republicans who are telling us point blank, I'm never voting for that guy. Here is what Emmett County, Michigan Republican Party Chair Parker Fairbairn told Politico. You hear a lot of moderate Republicans now who say they'll never vote for Trump again. They're longing for common sense conservatism, and they do not like Trump's blustery, retribution-focused rhetoric and his proposed radical restructuring of the federal government. Okay, well, that's anecdotal, right? I mean, you can't base everything on what Mr. Fairbairn there is having to say. Although he, of course, has a Republican Party county chair, hears this from the voters that he works with. So what about the actual numbers? Well, the numbers are actually even worse. Because Donald Trump is still cruising to an easy victory, obviously, in the Republican primary, the problem he has is that there's still tens of thousands of voters, state by state, that are refusing to vote for him, even though the other people have already dropped out. Georgia is a great example. In the recent Georgia primary, which Donald Trump did easily win, Nikki Haley still got 77,000 votes. 77,000 votes for a woman who's not even running anymore! Because these people could not bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump. And according to the report, there is still a lot of resentment among Nikki Haley supporters over how Trump not only treated her, but about what he's had to say about them as well. Which is why President Biden has launched this new initiative telling Nikki Haley voters, you are welcome here. Now, you know, you appeal more to progressives than moderate Republicans would be better for me, but politically speaking, it's a smart move because these people now do feel politically homeless. They're still conservative. They're still going to vote for the other Republicans on that ticket, but they don't want what Donald Trump has to offer. And this is happening in swing state after swing state after swing state. But we're supposed to believe, of course, that the polls are showing us that right now Donald Trump is going to win most of the swing states, right? I don't buy it. I really genuinely do not. The polls were way off in 2016. They were way off in 2020. And they're likely way off this year. Because all of the evidence that we are seeing, including Democrats overperforming in deep red areas of the country, not just overperforming, but winning in deep red areas of the country, Jacksonville, Florida, near Huntsville, Alabama. Yeah, Democrats aren't supposed to win there, but they are. So I'm going to take the real world evidence. I'm going to take what voters are actually saying, what the Republican strategists are telling us, and what the Republican officials are telling us. When they tell us that these people are saying we will never vote for Trump, I'm going to believe them over these idiotic polls with a 6% margin of error. Because so far, the polls are way off, and the voters have made it clear they don't want Donald Trump. So last week, Republican Congressman James Comer made headlines when he said that probably not going to have a vote on impeaching President Biden, and instead, he's going to send criminal referrals to the Department of Justice, right? I'm going to put it all on them. If they want to prosecute Biden, you know, they can go ahead and do it. But James Comer, after making headlines for saying this, decided, oh, crap, that may make it seem like I somehow failed. So Comer, of course, runs crying to Fox News, where instead of admitting that he didn't find any crimes, he launched a new conspiracy theory about why his impeachment probe has failed. Here is what James Comer said. Well, let me set this up better, okay? He was asked by Fox host Jimmy Fallon, who asked, well, what's so crazy about this is there's this counter effort being made to try to sell the American public on the idea that you guys haven't found anything. And I think we're dealing here with actual living, breathing business partners testifying on the contrary to quite an extent. So what do you liken this to? Is this Garland just trying to be a human shield for the president? Like what? What is this? And Comer responded, well, Garland's working with the deep state, who's working with the liberal mainstream media, to try to indoctrinate into people's minds that there's no evidence. Ah, that totally makes sense, right? So it's the Biden administration coordinating with the Department of Justice that is also somehow coordinating with the liberal media to indoctrinate the public into thinking that there's no evidence that President Biden committed a crime. Now, forget for a moment that Republican congressman Don Bacon went on Meet the Press this past weekend and said, our own lawyers are telling us there's no evidence of any crime. He literally said that. There's no evidence. Their own lawyers tell them. Comer knows that because Comer's getting the same information. But instead of going out there and admitting, listen, we got nothing, unfortunately. And what Fela said here about all these witnesses say the contrary. No, they fucking don't. Not a single witness has ever said they think President Biden committed a crime. Not one. All of them have testified to the contrary of that. So Fela is being a failure and lying to his own audience, saying, oh, the witnesses are saying there's crimes. Not one of them has. Not a single one of them. I hate these liars so goddamn much. Like, I'm just so angry at the ease with which they lie. And it pisses me off even more to think about all the people that listen to that and they eat it up. They friggin' love it. Disgusting, immoral, worthless human beings. Every one of them top to bottom, from the people who say it to the people who believe it. Just pisses me off beyond belief. But Comer refuses to admit he failed. He refuses to admit that all of his witnesses, his star witnesses, including the ones they had to actually pull out of prison to come and testify, because most of them are serving time, all of them have said Biden hasn't committed a crime. Comer's own lawyers have told him personally Biden hasn't committed a crime. But rather than admit his failures, Comer is out there launching a conspiracy theory about Biden working with the DOJ, working with the liberal media to indoctrinate the public, blah, 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 blah. Don't forget, Comer, Newsmax has called you out on the air for not having any evidence. Fox News has called you out on the air for not having any evidence. Conservative media is sick of this crap too. So how does that fit in with your little conspiracy, James? Because I think you forgot to factor that in too. So as I'm sure everybody is aware by now, Donald Trump's Trump Media and Technology Group had to file a financial filing with the Security and Exchange Commission. That filing was revealed to the public earlier this week, and it showed that Truth Social lost $58 million last year with an operating revenue of $4.1 million. And when this information came out, the stock of DJT, which is how it's being publicly traded, Trump's initials, it tanked. It lost 21% of its value in a single day. And things are going to continue to get worse for the company. In fact, things are already getting worse for the company. Because you see, as the dust has settled on that initial shock of, wow, you lost $58 million, more information is coming out from the people that actually did the financial audit of Trump Media and Technology. That is a Colorado-based group called BF Borgers CPA PC. They conducted the financial audit of Truth Social, and here's what they said. The operating losses raise substantial doubt about its ability to continue. The losses that Truth Social had in just 1 year make us think people who do this for a living, who analyze and audit companies based on their financial health, we don't think it's going to survive. I wonder what that's going to do to the stock price when the people who filed the report said, yeah, oh man, this thing's as good as dead. Uh-oh. Sounds like a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money on that. Oh no. I honestly, genuinely do not care. This is exactly what I predicted was going to happen to Trump Media and Technology, the stock of Truth Social. It is exactly how I predicted it would happen. because the price of the stock, the sale, all of that, once you get past that IPO and the dust settled on that, the performance of that stock will be tied directly to the performance of Truth Social, because that's the only entity that Trump Media and Technology actually has. And now that people, potential investors, see how horrible the company is, how it is just hemorrhaging millions of dollars a month, they're looking at it and they're saying, oh crap, I don't want to be left holding the bag. So I'm going to sell my stock. I'm going to offload. I'm going to get rid of this before I'm left with nothing. You know, kind of like the whole Enron thing. Do you want to hold on to that stock and ride it all the way to rock bottom? Or do you want to get out where you can still get a little bit of your money back? That is the question that investors in Truth Social have to ask themselves right now. There's only so long that Trump supporters are going to be able to hang on to it to artificially pump it up. And when those people, the average mom and pop Trump supporters who put their money into it, when they realize that they're losing everything and they dump it, there's going to be nobody left to pick it up. So Trump is between a rock and a hard place, but we need to listen to those auditors, because they say that at this rate, there is no way this company will survive, which of course means that Donald Trump's $3 billion, $4 billion, whatever it may be, payday he's been expecting is probably never going to happen. This week, sources close to the prosecutors in Manhattan told NBC News that Trump aide, former Trump aide Hope Hicks, is going to be called to testify against the former president at the upcoming hush money trial. Here's what's interesting about that. Hope Hicks did, in fact, talk to the prosecutors, the investigators, last year. So she talked to them, likely in a deposition form where it is under oath. So if that's the case, you don't necessarily need this individual to come and show up at trial. What is typical in those instances is that rather than having the person come take the stand, they will play clips of the deposition, the under oath testimony of the person, so they don't have to come back in and repeat themselves. But if Hope Hicks is being called to testify in trial, it's likely because she gave information against Donald Trump that was so damning that they want her in the courtroom, or they believe that they may be able to get even more information from her on the stand. Either way, this is a significantly bad development for Donald Trump. And it's bad in multiple ways. It's not just bad because of the information that Hope Hicks has. Trump's entire defense so far, and we know this from the court filings he has made, is based around the fact, they claim, you can't trust Michael Cohen because he went to jail. You can't trust Stormy Daniels because she was just in it for the money. So these two individuals are not trustworthy. Well, that's where Hope Hicks comes in. Because if the jury is on the fence about whether or not they can trust Michael Cohen's testimony, the prosecutors, their job at that point, is to bring in people to corroborate Michael Cohen's story. And the more they do that, the more the jury says, oh, he is telling the truth. We can believe him. That is super important to this trial. But let me read you this. This is from MSNBC. There's questions about on October 8th, 2016, the day that Stormy Daniels came forward to the National Enquirer and said that she was ready to share her story, but could potentially all but be paid off, that there were conversations that Hope Hicks was allegedly a part of. And we also know she was on another phone call later that month on the actual day that Michael Cohen agreed to pay that $130,000 to American Media. So the question is, does Hope Hicks have testimony to provide about the extent to which Donald Trump was signing off specifically on those payments? There's also other phone calls, by the way, that Hope Hicks was involved in between Michael Cohen and Donald Trump that related to this specific incident. So having her come in and take the stand is not going to be good for Donald Trump. Hope Hicks is the person who was there. She was involved in it, not criminally, of course. She didn't know what was going on. She didn't know it was illegal, probably. But she was there. She's no longer tied to Donald Trump. She is free to say and do whatever she wants. That's probably one of the reasons why Donald Trump was freaking out so bad about the trial this week, because he knows if his former friends are coming in to throw him under the bus, there's not a whole hell of a lot he can do at that point. Apparently, there is a threshold for some Trump supporters to where if Trump crosses it, they will not support him anymore. Even people who voted for him in 2016, they voted for him in 2020. There is a point where some of them will not do it anymore. And for one former Trump supporter identified only as Barbara, who spoke to Salon.com this week, that point for her was when Donald Trump, just a couple weeks ago, started selling his golden sneakers. Here is what she told Salon. Trump is wearing me out. I agree with his policies a lot. I want a border wall. I want to hold the Chinese accountable. I want more conservatives in government. It was Trump's $399 golden sneakers that put her over the edge. I ain't voting for him. That's the golden calf right there is golden sneakers. I have to back up a second here and say, like, I want to hold the Chinese accountable. For what specifically? Like, I mean, you kind of need to add that caveat. Like, I want to hold them accountable for blank, because otherwise that just sounds like a whole lot of racism. But, I mean, it is a Trump supporter, so it's probably just a lot of racism. I mean, let's be real about that. She wants the border wall. So I'm willing to bet this is not somebody that has, you know, one of those coexist stickers on the back of their car. However, she's done with Trump. But that doesn't mean she's voting for Biden. Although, a friend of hers, she said, did kind of open her up a little bit to Biden, because she continued. My cousin sent me a tape on Facebook. It was, okay, I don't know, how do you, you can't send a tape on Facebook. But anyway, okay, look. My cousin sent me a tape on Facebook. It was Joe Biden talking about Snickers bars. I thought it was crazy at first. I mean, what the heck is a president talking about Snickers bars for? But my cousin pointed out, he said something. I've said, there aren't enough Snickers in the Snickers bar anymore. I hadn't even heard of shrinkflation. I didn't know that was a thing. I sure didn't know it was a topic a president would talk about. Yeah, that made me think. That's the comment right there. Because isn't that the ultimate goal? That made me think. Right there. Like, that is the eye-opening statement. That, to me, is more important than her, than her saying, I'm not voting for him because he's selling shoes. Or I'm not voting for him because he's selling Bibles. The part where it's like, huh, I actually hadn't been paying attention to President Biden, but when I listened to him, it made me think. And this is a two-time Trump voter, folks, finally admitting that, hey, once I actually started thinking, then I decided I'm not voting for Trump and I may vote for Biden. There may be hope. There may be hope for some of these folks. And again, this interview was before Donald Trump was actually selling those $60 Bibles. So maybe there's more people. Maybe there's more folks that are waking up every day realizing this whole thing's a grift. This guy is trying to sell me crap I don't need just to make a buck. If we can just get them to think, as Barbara here points out, there may be hope for some of them. And that is all the time we have for this week. But don't forget, you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You can find me, Farron Cousins, across social media at Farron Balanced. Whether it's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, or Threads, at Farron Balanced will get you right to me. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, everyone. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you next time.